Hi, welcome to the China Unscripted podcast. I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And we have two very special guests joining us today from Bolivia. Please introduce yourselves.
Hi, my name is Janice Bacadasa. I'm a human rights activist and nonviolent action promoter.
My name is Nakai Mirtenbaum. I'm a lawyer in Bolivia. I studied sociology too, and I've worked a lot in activism in Bolivia and currently living here in New York.
So you promote nonviolence? What's so great about nonviolence? They don't make the best summer blockbusters.
Well, we make the best revolutions, though, statistically.
Statistics.
If you look at the revolutions.
86% of the time, people just make up statistics.
No, but this is, we actually did sit down and study this. So
say the numbers. Say the magical numbers.
If you look at all the revolutions in the last 100 years on Earth, only
where else would we be looking?
Well, you'd never know. But only 20% of the ones that were violent actually made it to democratic change or independence, which is what these revolutions were looking for. But if you're using nonviolent means and tactics and strategy, the likelihood that you will reach your goal is twice as big. It's 56% and more. So if you look at all these cases, over 323 revolutions since 1900 up until 2006, you will realize that although we always learn about war and violence and the heroes are the ones that fought in the wars, which they are heroes as well, you realize that if what you're looking for is democracy, you have to build it from the ground with the people, and that's what nonviolence allows you to do.
Okay, so say if there was a dictator and I wanted to overthrow that dictator to become the new dictator, I could use violence.
Yeah, most definitely.
Great. Shelley, we're ready to move against Matt.
Oh, yeah. It'll be a two against one coup. Is that what?
Yeah. So that's all very silly. Well, so tell us about the situation in Bolivia.
The current situation is pretty polarized. We have a lot of people moving towards the plan of the official government now, which is to perpetuate in power. They've been in power since 2006, and currently they're trying to force through the Constitutional Court a 4-3 election, which we think most certainly will establish already a completely co-opted system for them to maintain the power maybe for like 50 years, I would say.
So President
like
Morales.
Like a Chavez situation.
Yeah, so
like
he's been president for 12 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so he wants to be elected again.
Yeah, that is exactly
so
what
he
happening.
During his first term, we had a change to the constitution. Hence, he said that because the country was born again, the first term doesn't count, and that's how he validated his third term. And now that he wants to go for the fourth one, check this out. He's saying that the clauses in the constitution that prevented him from running again are actually a violation to his human rights, because human rights say that every citizen of a country should be allowed to participate in the political life of the country.
That's so if he wasn't elected again, he would not be participating in the political life of the country?
As a population, violating his human rights. And this is not actually the first time that this happened in South America.
People don't talk enough about the human rights of the dictators.
Right? Why are they have feelings too.
Exactly.
But like, honestly, like it's dark that like the human rights which were built to defend the population against the system, now the system is taking that
being
and like
subverted.
Using it against the people. It's crazy.
Well,
it's
speaking of that, I know he is President Morales is an indigenous person. He's used that image as well to kind of subvert the position of other indigenous people within Bolivia, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He has built and this is something that you see in a lot of dictatorships in Africa. Like when you have the new dictator, the first year, he makes a lot of good changes towards democracy. So everyone thinks like, oh, this one is better. But then afterwards, they clamp down. So Morales, when he came up, the first few years, he made good changes, and I do recognize that he brought a lot of inclusion and representation from minorities within the system. But as time has progressed, he's moved farther and farther away from the party's narrative, and not just away, but a complete betrayal of what they stood up for. And now there are several violations to human rights of indigenous people. Beyond that, there are several violations to human rights of common citizens that are just expressing dissidence in one way or another. And something that really worries to our generation is the damage to the environment that is being done during his government. The amount of deforestation during the Morales regime is so much higher than under any other previous government that we've ever had.
It is the highest we've had in our history.
Yeah. What is happening with the forests? He's using it for raw materials or what?
It's just being opened for exploitation by Chinese
soy
companies, like, for soy. The one that's closest to the hearts of many Bolivians is the case of the Tipnis, this national park that is really important for our entire ecosystem. And they're building a road through the middle of it. And at the same time, that allows coca growers to go deeper into these areas and keep up growing coca. And that is the area where coca goes towards narcotraffic. There's a UN study that shows that the coca grown in El Chapare, that's where Evo began, that's where his leadership was built, 97% of it goes directly to drug trafficking. So there's so much damage and little overseeing, no checks and balances.
Yeah, this forest actually concentrates the major population of indigenous nations, we call them, because they have their own language, their own identity, and they are being like totally diminished of their own space and rights, because according to the 169 UN rights, they are like, our country actually in 1990s was one of the ones who like promoted the right for the indigenous nations to own their own space and have decisions over it, and now we're the first ones, and like the major government is taking like the first step towards diminishing these rights.
Well, since this is China Unscripted, let's talk about China's role in all of this. Now, you said China was the one building this road through the, I'm not even going to try and say it because I'll butcher it.
Tipnis.
The Tipnis.
Yes, I believe so. And beyond that, as I said, 80% of our bilateral external debt goes to China. Like, we are highly in debt with China as it is. And at the same time, the money that comes from this investment is executed by Chinese companies only. And there is absolutely no way to oversee or control the environmental damage that is done during the execution of these projects. We have a lot of roads that are being built, dams as well, dams. And there's a lot of natural areas that are being broken into by these projects. And many of them are even senseless and unnecessary. But
well, can you give us an example of that?
Well, for example, I know that they built this sugar processing, like the whole building.
Like a plant.
Plant in an area where you have no sugar cane. So that was completely unnecessary. We found out that there's a road that's going to be built to this little town in Bolivia that's called San Jose. San Ignacio de Velasco. And in this little town where you don't have a hospital that's, like, we call it first degree, like an actual good hospital to take care of the population, they build this whole international airport for absolutely no reason. And it's like a hush-hush thing. Everyone knows that it's because that's where they're going to get the drugs out of. Yeah. And that's where they're going to fly in the Venezuelan airplanes to pick up the drugs. But and this is actually a really funny and even personal story for me, because I went to this place, San Ignacio, and we work with the groups of resistance there. It's called Resistencia Ignaciana or Chiquitana. It's like Ignacian resistance. And one of the reasons we were protesting was the inauguration of this airport. And we were comparing it to the fact that there's so much money invested in this and there's no hospitals, like very good level hospitals in the area. Fate had it that I got incredibly sick. I got intoxication while I was there. There was no big hospital that could take care of me. So I was laying in this like very bad hospital bed for the little hospital they had. They had no medicine that they could give me. They could barely get me an IV. It was this whole thing, and very ironic that that was precisely what we were protesting for that day. But yeah, that's a Chinese company. And we just found out yesterday that a Chinese company will also be building a new road to that little town, to San Ignacio de Velasco.
So these Chinese companies, do they hire Bolivian workers to do the work?
No.
Like, the problem with this big loans we are having from China is that they are putting also the conditions in which these loans are going to be invested in terms of which companies are going to execute the project, and most of the, you can say, the top, the heading workers, like the managers and stuff like that. And like, yeah, like probably you get Bolivians, but they do like the small stuff. And actually, like, we have reports of, for example, this engineer whose name was Antonio Delgado in
Angulo.
Antonio Angulo. He reported that there was being like abusive conduct of like the managers against like Bolivian workers, because, well, we could say that they don't treat like in Chinese companies people the best way, and they're like replicating these conducts in like Bolivian working spaces. Like,
yeah, in this case, this was June last year. The Chinese company that was doing this was called Harzone. And they, again, this was in Beni, which is an area on the northeastern side of Bolivia. And we found out that they had convicted people from China who were serving their time in Bolivia. They were working under slavery conditions, basically. And
one of them
actually raped three of the cookers for that camp who were Bolivian women. And when they tried to have a trial against them, and the Chinese company found out that this was happening, they relocated this worker to another camp, and then we couldn't continue with the trial, which is something that has happened often. Like, as we mentioned, the rule of law is no longer existent in Bolivia. The government has centralized a lot of power, and whenever we try to have a trial against one of these episodes that happen rather often, there is no way to actually have justice towards it, which also happened with the Jaguars.
Yeah.
It's what's happening right now.
I mean, there was actually a Bloomberg article that came out last week about a company called China Communications Construction Company, CCCC, which is we've talked about them before. They're one of the biggest builders on the Belt and Road Initiative, which Bolivia is a part of, where they're doing much of the same thing, where like they come in, build infrastructure that then damages the environment or is shoddy.
I was going to say, Shelley, all of this sounds awfully familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah, so it's kind of funny, like, you guys are talking about this now, and like now I think it's starting to get exposure, like this kind of thing that's happening with these projects, infrastructure projects that are part of this Belt and Road.
People are talking about the Belt and Road.
Yeah.
And not because of the catchy propaganda songs.
No. It's interesting, though, because, like, it's a $1 trillion project, but only, like, less than a third of the amount of money actually finds its way to, the pledged money finds its way to these countries. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because on one hand, it's like, you're promising, like, to help with infrastructure development and grants, and you're not giving the money. But on the other hand, like, in Bolivia, if you already owe, like, 80% of your debt to the Chinese government, do you want more money?
How are you going to pay that back?
Yeah, that's like a major problem. Like, all these issues we're having right now, it's only with $609 million of debt, and up to 2025, we have to disburse, is that the right word? $1 billion more. So we're going to be like $1 billion.
More in depth
in
than we are.
7 years than we are. And obviously, we're in no conditions as a country, and our economic system is in no conditions to give that back anytime soon. This 50 years, I would say, next 50 years. So that's the big question, like, what's coming up next?
But Bolivia is pretty strategically located in South America.
So maybe you could just give away that new airport to China.
Well, this is the thing you see around the world with the debt traps. Mm-hmm. I wonder if we'll see a military base in Bolivia at any point.
Oh. I mean, we have a lot of military trade with China already, military equipment. Yeah. We bought from Chinese companies with the money that was lent to us or given to us by the Chinese loans, $113 million for 6 helicopters, $44 million for 2 MA-60 military airplanes. And you just have all of this unnecessary spending mm-hmm. going towards military when, again, you don't have a hospital in a place like San Ignacio.
Well, it makes sense. China is giving your president, quote-unquote, military weapons. Mm-hmm. And
That's not a problem, right?
Yeah.
Why would that be?
Nonviolent resistance.
good plan.
It's still a great plan. You know why? Precisely because violence is where they know how to defend themselves. When you have a strike of doctors, which we had last year for about 2 months, and they use a lot of leftivism, the government didn't know how to counteract that.
Did you say laftivism?
Laftivism, yeah. We call it chistivismo in Spanish. We coined that term, by the way. Ah. But it's using humor to educate the population because sometimes...
Hey, that's a great idea, Shelly. We should try that.
It sounds
Does that
like
work,
something
though?
You could do.
I think we should resort to violence. I think that's... let's stick to what we know.
But yeah, it's worked. It's worked a lot for us. We've already achieved a lot of things with the movement. The movement we're in is called Rios de Pie, Standing Rivers. And we've already achieved a whole lot through nonviolence, including bringing light to these environmental abuses.
Mm-hmm. And going back to a thread we kind of dropped, you said there's something going on with the jaguars?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Chinese citizens, I'm not going to say company because this was completely illegal. There's no, like, trade agreement signed there, were found illegally transporting jaguars' teeth and skin because it's worth a lot of money in the international black market, apparently. And once they were found, because we've heard about a lot of these cases, but there was this one case where it was pretty obvious, you just couldn't go away from it. So environmental activists managed to take this to trial. Keep in mind, these activists were later put in trial themselves for absolutely fake charges. But anyways, they took this to trial, and I believe it's been 11 sessions, if not more, that it keeps getting suspended. Like, you never have the actual trial go on because either the judge gets sick, the translator doesn't show up, something happens, and you just can't get justice for this.
Well, I mean, then that kind of goes back to, you know, President Morales. He talks about how he's representing, like, the indigenous people, the natural, the country of Bolivia in this way, and yet even the jaguars are just being sidelined for not even Chinese companies, but just Chinese poachers, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
That also reminds me, you were telling me something earlier about how Morales views himself in a divine kind of way.
I could. All right. Actually, my dad was an anthropologist, and he worked at the, which was called the Andean Oral Session. Excuse my English. Something like that in English. Mm. But they built, like, throughout the last 10 years, the oral tradition of the indigenous nations in Bolivia for them to give them identity through the modern state, which tends to just be legal and not represent everybody. That was the main problem. That's the whole critic to, like, neoliberalism in South America. So these people used this narrative, this indigenous narrative, to create myths. And, like, because there's this big myth of the Apumalcu. This is called, it's like the Inca king, you could say, that will save you. It's like the myth of the man that, or woman, this, like, entity, you know, that will, like, save you from your troubles.
So it's like a savior figure.
Yeah, it's like a messiah, you know, like an indigenous messiah. And they took, like, this myth, and they're, like, using it politically, but only, very sadly, as a symbol, you know, and not really taking it to the material level, where you can see changes through like real, if you want, you would say policies that will like really help people to regain their identity or create spaces where they can have better conditions to live, especially indigenous people who have been like marginalized through the whole history of Bolivia.
So when you say they use the myth, how do they use the myth?
They like actually, if you look for it in like television, last election, which was in 2014, well, he won, and they did in Tiwanaku, which is a very like symbolic sacred space. They created like this whole thing ritual. Where like ritual where they put like a suit and like we're doing the
kind of traditional rituals.
So he like after he won the election, then they perform these like indigenous rituals.
Yeah.
What like is he now like embodying this savior figure? Is that what it is?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and you know, in the end, like the symbolic ways in which one manifests their political status is not very relevant more than what the material reality really is, you know? Like if they would really to put like money on education and health that we really need, like I really wouldn't mind. Like, yeah, do your traditional like dances and whatever you want, but they're like just embodying this whole like aesthetic thing around all this indigenous myths and behind they're like treasoning like indigenous nations and like crashing forests that are like really sacred for indigenous people actually. So it's really ironic and
so basically like while Morales is doing things that really damage the indigenous population, he's kind of painting himself to be a reincarnation of some divine figure.
Yeah, and you know, this is the hardest part is that inside the country, this myth is almost, it has decreased a lot. Like in the imaginary, collective imaginary of people, like people really don't respect him that much. But like the tragedy in this is that they're like, for example, in Tiwanaku, where when they did this whole tradition thing, most of the reporters were like French reporters, like from Denmark and like Norwegian people who are like, oh, like, you know, they treat like the indigenous like this savage noble that can do no harm.
That's how they treat Shelley.
He's like, that man is from the forest. He's like, he just eats apple.
Yeah, well,
like,
I'm the reincarnation of the
lives
old
with
emperor,
the monkeys. And So, yeah, I mean, there's this strong issue too of like this mystifying Morales,
so that basically gives him like cred in the international community
a lot,
is what you're
a lot. So yeah. Because people like French people like
don't get me started on the French.
I mean, I've seen like the covers of the newspapers and they like they love it, like the folklorize to folklorize politics and like just to give it a news, you know, we have an indigenous president, but they don't really go to the core of what's going on. And that's a huge problem for us Bolivians.
And so this is a narrative you were also talking about how, you know, there's sort of this idea that like, oh, this is good. Morales is rebelling against sort of the Western imperialist powers. I believe you said he calls the United States the empire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's also a narrative China plays into a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, who really is the empire?
Well, it's actually interesting because Morales was just in China recently meeting with the Chinese leader Xi Jinping, and I was reading some of the propaganda like articles from Chinese state-run media, and one of the things they kept mentioning is that like, well, first of all, apparently Xi Jinping said that China-Bolivia relationship are at the best ever. Like the best ever.
Congratulations.
So, you guys must be very excited.
So
thank you. We're trying hard.
Maybe you'll get that hospital someday.
Hopefully.
But one of the things they kept bringing up in this like propaganda speak, which is very hard to read, but like they kept talking about South-South cooperation. And I didn't know what this was. Do you know what South-South cooperation is?
South-South?
South-South. South-South cooperation came from a like a meeting that was held in 1955 among a lot of countries in Southeast Asia, Africa, the Middle East, basically a lot of countries that had been former colonies, or it was basically the first like anti-imperialist kind of like conference that was like talking about like further like, you know, decolonizing like these, some of these like but like, you know, we're talking about places like Vietnam, like Iraq, Iran, like lots of countries in Africa where they would be, they were or would shortly transition to be dictators. And it's interesting that like the Chinese government is still using this language of like, we are on your side, Bolivia, we are like, against the imperialists, like you and us, we're like the South-South cooperation, like we're going to use that framework to for our relations.
There's a common narrative. It's just like, we're on your side, just give us your jaguars, your forests, your lithium, your mining, everything.
Yeah, like, we're one of you. We were also hurt by the Western imperialist powers. So, of course, we're... So, it's interesting that they're like, oh, well, we are with you, Bolivia. We are also, you know, the victims of these Western imperialist forces. I actually have a question. How do people in Bolivia know how much the Chinese government is involved in what's happening in Bolivia?
Like, the big case that, like... put more awareness to the investment and through the close relationship we're having as a government with the Chinese government was actually Gamze.
Which
was like
played a huge role to the to what is happening right now with our democracy, because there was a referendum on February 21st, 2016 where the Bolivian people were asked by Morales' government if we wanted to remove the presidential term limits, and we said no, and we won democratically. We said we wanted democracy. What happened was that they tried to turn that around by saying that there was this smear hate campaign from the empire, because right before the referendum, this big news about corruption broke, and these are the news. Listen to this. The news that broke that I think... didn't play that much of a definitive role in our referendum. We know we don't want eternal re-election of the president. Was that there was this Chinese company that was executing a lot of infrastructure work and millionaire projects in Bolivia, that had this lady, this 26-year-old lady, perhaps 28, as the head of the company, of this Chinese company. She was an she was incredibly millionaire. Like, she had so much money, lived in one of the wealthiest houses in La Paz, and she was doing incredibly well. And it brought the attention as to how would this woman, who is so young and has no university degree, be the head of this huge Chinese company.
And she was Bolivian?
And she was Bolivian. So this one journalist actually looked deep down into this and then finds out that this lady... apparently, when she was underage, we're still like looking into that, had a son for Evo Morales, for the president. So that's traffic of influence, as we call it in Bolivia, tráfico de influencias. It means that there's something weird going on back there. And when this was exposed, the whole news broke, and it got even worse, because it turns out, and we're not sure at the end of the day, that either she lied to the president and the child never existed, yet he signed the birth certificate and some two other documents recognizing the child as his own, or the child died at a very young age and the president was lied to about it. The weird thing is that at one point he said that the child did exist and it died, then they said that the child never existed, then it turned into this whole soap opera thing. She said that she was going to bring the child up, that the child was still alive. She's in jail right now. But at the end of the day, it didn't work out.
In the end.
But she's having a very good treatment in jail, and she can sneak out if she wants to see the World Cup games for soccer.
Well, I mean, that's basic human rights.
Go figure. Yes. But so this whole thing like really resonated with the population. It was this huge scandal. Because of the whole soap opera scenario. You had the president saying one thing and then the vice president saying another thing the next hour. But at the end of the day, it was a Chinese company she was the head of, suddenly. And a Chinese company that was managing a lot of money.
Yeah.
So
he had President Morales had essentially a love child with this potentially underage girl.
Uh-huh.
And then somehow she became an influential person in a Chinese company.
She became the head of a Chinese company.
The head.
Yeah.
Interesting. It's amazing what you can do when you're the reincarnation of some savior deity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it was, they tried to say that the fact that this news came out right before the referendum was this very, like, huge plot from the U.S. so that they would lose
fake news
start of. Yeah, and they persecuted the journalist that broke this news out. He had to leave the country for a while. It was this huge scandal. But like I said, at the end of the day, even in this, like, soap opera scenarios, you see that there's a Chinese company in between, which shows that there are a lot of Chinese companies and Chinese influence moving within the country in a place where you have no check and balances, a place where you cannot oversee the contracts, and a place that you cannot take anyone to trial should they do anything illegal.
How do Bolivians feel about the Chinese influence on their country? Or is it hard to tell?
I mean, there is a big resistance, like, in terms of just, I would say, out of ignorance, people are not having, like, a racist approach to the situation.
No.
But they're just afraid, because there is this broad awareness of how Chinese workers work. And, like, in the working community, people are saying, like, we're not gonna, like, we don't want to be like China. Like, we really want, like, conditions to work, and we don't want our resources, like, taken away in our nature. But in the end, like, we had this long tradition also of, like, imperialism, you may say, from the part of the United States through the whole 20th century. Like, it's no myth, like, the Condor plan with Pinochet, like, and, like, there was this military dictators, like, trying to regain power, geopolitical power for the United States. So, like, we have this big resistance against like, anyone who wants to come and, like, take our abuse of our resources and our conditions. But still, like, we need, of course, this is not, like, we're not against in like, people to invest in our country. We know we live in a globalized world, and we need, like, bigger countries, bigger economies to, like, help us diversify our economy and, like, try to work with one another. But the question goes, like, in which conditions we are going to work with this country. So we had the resistance with the United States, and now, like, Chinese, it's, like, even worse. So, because their capitalism is, like, more barbaric, really. Like, their conditions are, like, even worse. So, like, people are, like, so, yeah, we were here before, but now we're, like, here. So, like, it's not, like, a good position.
So people do have a, like, a awareness of what's happening with China.
Yeah, they do. But it's, like, what's the option here? Mm-hmm. It's, like, what are we going to do? Like, and that is a big question, yeah.
It's something that's kind of understood and, I guess, somehow accepted, because, like I said, we have so little space to oversee and to counter abuses. But like Nakai indicated, I don't think there's a racist response to it, especially because we don't have that much of a high migration from Asian countries to Bolivia. We're landlocked, so we only have Brazilians and some other groups. But there is a wide awareness, especially within the business community, that there is a lot of Chinese influence within our country. And yeah, it's worrisome, because once you understand that there are convicts working in your country under slavery conditions, you realize that you are living within a system that's allowing a high amount of human rights violations. What secures you that in 10 years, when you are in so much debt with China, you're not going to be working under those conditions too, if the system is allowing it already?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you see China's aims in South America as a whole?
I would say, unfortunately, countries in South America are placed like little pawns in this big geopolitical chessboard. And unfortunately, I would say they want to maintain their growing economy, especially with the basis of like food, for example, which they're doing right now in the case of Bolivia. Their new contract they signed last year, it's for soy and beef to be exported to Bolivia, from Bolivia to China. And mainly, I think, looking at the future, like South America, it's very rich in resources, has a lack of institutionality, rule of law. Therefore, they can gain geopolitical power, take resources without any great political strategy. And, of course, that positions them as the savior against the tradition of United States or the World Bank, IMF, in the case of like South American countries. And so, yeah, they're positioning themselves as the saviors too in this condition.
As a new power.
And, yeah, and they're like reassuring themselves of like great amounts of resources for the century. The lithium thing is very interesting because most of the technology we're using today, like all the batteries in the cell phones, are made of lithium.
And there's a lot of lithium in Bolivia.
Correct? Yeah.
70% of the world's lithium reserves apparently are in Bolivia.
Wow.
So we hope that that's not going to be like, oh, we can't pay you the $1 billion you gave us in 2016. So here's our salt lake. You can build all the cell phones you want for the whole world. And, you know, so.
And then we'll be using WeChat.
WeChat on a Huawei phone. What could go wrong?
What could go wrong?
I think that's tragic enough, guys. You guys don't want to cry?
Some kind of hopeful note?
Yeah, okay. So all that's very sad. Make me leave me with something to be happy about.
All right. So the hope we have in this is that next year we have elections.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we do have this competitive authoritarian regime in which probably the elections won't be fair because our electoral
branch
is obviously controlled by the executive, so there's a possibility of fraud. But still, there's a candidate, an independent candidate, which wants to run, probably, we don't know yet, for next year. And he already has like a 25% tendency of vote against a 27% tendency of vote of Morales right now, which is really low for his history. Like, he has really decreased in the last 2-3 years involving the case of Camsay and the child. Like, people are like really demystifying his myth. Therefore, like, there's this huge citizen movement in Bolivia since the referendum in 2016, and there's this hope that this whole citizen movement can evolve in a certain political influential structure to like participate in the elections next year, and in the combination with in a united front with probably the relevant candidates we have in the political party system, we can defeat this guy and try to make the country, give the country a better destiny.
And so democracy.
So get a new person in charge and maybe make some actual change.
And not just a new person. Yeah. And that's another thing that I think is already an achievement for Bolivia. Our protest culture was really violent. And you have to understand that every time you had a protest by miners, they would just march down La Paz throwing dynamite. So,
well,
generally that's a weekly thing.
That's
like
legit.
It's gotten to a point where we just walk by. You're not even
bothered.
You're
just walking
anymore
by people throwing dynamite. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, that's normal.
Guys, here comes a miner. Get out of the way.
Yeah, it's very common. And then you have coca growers and like you have all of these other sectors of society.
They're just throwing cocaine as they walk down the street.
No, but they're being really aggressive. And during this whole last 2 years where you've had Evo changing the constitution and people getting really annoyed, this whole new movement of resistance, the citizens movement, has been born, which is mainly composed by our generation that used to be really apathetic towards politics, but now we're participating. And one of the main lines of our work is precisely nonviolence. So had this new line of resistance not being formed, I think we would have had a lot more deaths than we had thus far in this resistance project, because the government plays the game of seeking violence. That's where they defend themselves best. And I'm not just saying that as an authoritarian regime, the Morales government itself rose to power because they had really violent protests that kept the entire country on hold for a long time until we went like, okay, yeah, we need to do something because otherwise this is not going to move on. And through nonviolence, we've already managed to change the narrative of resistance in Bolivia, which is a huge achievement, which hadn't happened up in our history. Like, we were always a very violent protest nation. And you also have a lot of citizen empowerment on an individual level, which is necessary in countries like Bolivia. So more than finding the guy and putting him and having him do changes, I think we have so many people mobilized and interested in politics that we can keep whoever comes in on check and like be on his back the whole time. Mm. And even more than that, I really believe that systems, and this is also nonviolence theory, don't work if people don't obey. It doesn't matter how much military equipment we buy from China. If the military doesn't want to shoot people, they're not going to shoot people. And how do you achieve that? Again, through smart fights and smart activism. So I don't think everything is lost. I really think that even if we were to lose the elections next year, because I'm realistic too, I think what we have now can grow into a real resistance, and eventually we will get rid of them. I am 100% sure that we will.
Well, when they had elections in Chile, people didn't think Pinochet was going to get out of power, and then things turned out very differently.
Yeah, and once Maduro is out, the game's going to change a lot for us too. So,
you think he's not in a very stable position?
I wouldn't say he's not in a very stable position, but I also wouldn't say it's sustainable forever. Sorry.
Yes, definitely not sustainable. Well, thank you. You actually, you guys left it on a very positive note.
Yeah.
You left it on a very positive
Maybe
note.
Maybe Bolivia can become the Malaysia of South America.
That's the goal. Yeah. That's generally the goal.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us. If somebody wants to learn more about what you're doing, where can they go?
They can go to our movement's Facebook page and soon webpage, Rios de Pie, Standing Rivers. Just Google us, Activism Bolivia. Not much is going to come up, so you'll be able to find us. Or you can find us on social media as well. We're very active there.
Yeah.
Great.
Our names.
I believe you followed me on Instagram today.
I did. See? Yeah. We're very active on social media.
The Instagram revolution.
Did she follow you on Instagram?
I haven't found Shelly yet.
I don't think so.
I have your phone number, though, so we're even closer.
There we go. That's true.
Instagram.
All right. Well, I'm depressed again. All right. Well, thank you again for joining us. Thanks for listening to China Unscripted. Once again, I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelly Zhang.
I'm Janice Vakadasa.
I'm Nakai Mirtenbaum. Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to have you.